shooting star. She wondered if they ever ran out of power, witchlight stones, like flashlights ran out of batteries. She hoped not. The idea of being plunged into sightless darkness in this creepy place filled her with a visceral terror. The smell of rotting fruit grew stronger as they reached the end of the stairs and found themselves in another long tunnel. This one opened out into a pavilion surrounded by spires of carved bone. A pavilion Clary remembered very well. Inlaid silver stars sprinkled the floor like precious confetti. In the center of the pavilion was a black table. Dark fluid had pooled on its slick surface and trickled across the floor in rivulets. When Clary had stood before the Council of Brothers, there had been a heavy silver sword hanging on the wall behind the table. The sword was gone now, and in its place, smeared across the wall, was a great fan of scarlet. "Is that blood?" Isabel whispered. She didn't sound afraid, just stunned. "Looks like it." Alec's eyes scanned the room. The shadows were as thick as paint and seemed full of movement. His grip was tight on his seraph blade. "What could have happened?" Isabel said. "The Silent Brothers. I thought they were indestructible." Her voice trailed off as Clary turned, the witchlight in her hand catching strange shadows among the spires. One was more strangely shaped than the others. She willed the witchlight to burn brighter, and it did, sending a lancing bolt of brightness into the distance. Impaled on one of the spires, like a worm on a hook, was the dead body of a Silent Brother. Hands, ribboned in blood, dangled just above the marble floor. His neck looked broken. Blood had pooled beneath him, clotted and black in the witchlight. Isabel gasped. "Alec, do you see?"
"I see."
Alec's voice was grim.
"And I've seen worse. It's Jace I'm worried about."
Isabel went forward and touched the black basalt table, her fingers skimming the surface.
"This blood is almost fresh. Whatever happened, it happened not long ago."
Alec moved toward the brother's impaled corpse. Smeared marks led away from the blood pool on the floor.
"Footprints," he said. "Someone running."
Alec indicated with a curled hand that the girl should follow him. They did, Isabel pausing only to wipe her bloody hands off on her soft leather leg guards. The path of footprints led from the pavilion and down a narrow tunnel, disappearing into darkness. When Alec stopped, looking around him, Clary pushed past him impatiently, letting the witchlight blaze a silvery white path of light ahead of them. She could see a set of double doors at the end of the tunnel. They were ajar.
Jace. Somehow she sensed him, that he was close.
She took off at a half run, her boots clacking loudly against the hard floor. She heard Isabel call after her, and then Alec and Isabel were also running, hard on her heels. She burst through the doors at the end of the hall and found herself in a large, stone-bound room bisected by a row of metal bars sunk deep into the ground. Clary could just make out a slumped shape on the other side of the bars. Just outside the cell sprawled the limp form of a Silent Brother. Clary knew immediately that he was dead. It was the way he was lying, like a doll whose joints had been twisted the wrong way until they broke. His parchment-colored robes were half torn off. His scarred face, contorted into a look of utter terror, was still recognizable. It was Brother Jeremiah. She pushed past his body to the door of the cell. It was made of bars spaced close together and hinged on one side. There seemed to be no lock or knob that she could pull. She heard Alec, behind her, say her name, but her attention wasn't on him. It was on the door. Of course, there was no visible way to open it, she realized. The brothers didn't deal in what was visible, but rather what wasn't. Holding the witchlight in one hand, she scrabbled for her mother's stele with the other. From the other side of the bars came a noise, a sort of muffled gasp or whisper. She wasn't sure which, but she recognized the source. Jace. She slashed at the cell door with the tip of her stele, trying to hold the rune for open in her mind, even as it appeared, black and jagged against the hard metal. The electrum sizzled where the stele touched it. Open, she willed the door. Open, open,
open. A noise like ripping cloth tore through the room. Clary heard Isabel cry out as the door blew off its hinges entirely, crashing into the cell like a drawbridge falling. Clary could hear other noises, metal coming uncoupled from metal, a loud rattle like a handful of tossed pebbles. She ducked into the cell, the fallen door wobbling under her feet. Witchlight filled the small room, lighting it as bright as day. She barely noticed the rows of manacles, all of different metals, gold, silver, steel, and iron, as they came undone from the bolts in the walls and clattered to the stone floor. Her eyes were on the slumped figure in the corner. She could see the bright hair, the hand outstretched, the loose manacle lying a little distance away. His wrist was bare and bloody, the skin braceleted with ugly bruises. She went down on her knees, setting her stele aside, and gently turned him over. It was Jace. There was another bruise on his cheek, and his face was very white, but she could see the darting movement under his eyelids. A vein pulsed at his throat. He was alive. Relief went through her like a hot wave, undoing the tight cords of tension that had held her together this long. The witchlight fell to the floor beside her, where it continued to blaze. She stroked Jace's hair back from his forehead with a tenderness that felt foreign to her. She'd never had any brothers or sisters, not even a cousin. She'd never had occasion to bind up wounds or kissed scraped knees or take care of anyone, really. But it was all right to feel tenderness toward Jace like this, she thought, unwilling to draw her hand back, even as Jace's eyelids twitched and he groaned. He was her brother. Why shouldn't she care what happened to him? His eyes opened. The pupils were huge, dilated. Maybe he'd banged his head. His eyes fixed on her with a look of dazed bemusement. Clary, he said, what are you doing here? I came to find you, she said, because it was the truth. A spasm went across his face. You're really here? I'm not dead, am I? No, she said, gliding her hand on the side of his face. You passed out is all. Probably hit your head, too. His hand came up to cover hers where it lay on his cheek. Worth it, he said in such a low voice that she wasn't sure it was what he said after all. What's going on? It was Alec, ducking through the low doorway, Isabel just behind him. Clary jerked her hand back, then cursed herself silently. She hadn't been doing anything wrong. Jace struggled into a sitting position. His face was gray, his shirt spotted with blood. Alec's look turned to one of concern. And are you all right? He demanded, kneeling down. What happened? Can you remember? Jace held up his uninjured hand. One question at a time, Alec. My head already feels like it's going to split open. Who did this to you? Isabel sounded both bewildered and furious. No one did anything to me. I did it to myself trying to get the manacles off. Jace looked down at his wrist. It looked as if he'd nearly scraped all the skin off it, and winced. Here, said both Clary and Alec at the same time, reaching out for his hand. Their eyes met, and Clary dropped her hand first. Alec took hold of Jace's wrist and drew out his stele. With a few quick flicks of his wrist, he drew an Iratze, a healing rune, just below the bracelet of bleeding skin. Thanks, said Jace, drawing his hand back. The injured part of his wrist was already beginning to knit back together. Brother Jeremiah is dead, said Clary. I know. Disdaining Alec's offered assistance, Jace pulled himself up to a standing position, using the wall to hold him up. He was murdered. Did the Silent Brothers kill each other? Isabel asked. I don't understand. I don't understand why they'd do that. They didn't, said Jace. Something killed them. I don't know what. A spasm of pain twisted his face. Oh, my head. Maybe we should go, said Clary nervously. Before whatever killed them. Comes back for us, said Jace. He looked down at his bloody shirt and bruised hand. I think it's gone, but I suppose he could still bring it back. Who could bring what back? Alec demanded, but Jace said nothing. His face had gone from gray to paper white,
Alec caught him as he began to slide down the wall.
Jace.
I'm all right, Jace protested, but his hand gripped Alec's sleeve tightly.
I can stand.
It looks to me like you're using a wall to prop you up. That's not my definition of standing.
It's leaning, Jace told him. Leaning comes right before standing.
Stop bickering, said Isabel, kicking a doused torch out of her way. We need to get out of here. If there's something out there nasty enough to kill the Silent Brothers, it'll make short work of us.
Izzy's right. We should go.
Clary retrieved the witchlight and stood up.
Jace, are you okay to walk?
He can lean on me.
Alec drew Jace's arm across his shoulders. Jace leaned heavily against him.
Come on, Alec said gently. We'll fix you up when we get outside.
Slowly they moved toward the cell door, where Jace paused, staring down at the figure of Brother Jeremiah lying twisted on the paving stones. Isabel knelt down and drew the Silent Brother's brown wool hood down to cover his contorted face. When she straightened up, all their faces were grave.
I've never seen a Silent Brother afraid, Alec said. I didn't think it was possible for them to feel fear.
Everyone feels fear. Jace was still very pale, and though he was cradling his injured hand against his chest, Clary didn't think it was because of physical pain. He looked distant, as if he had withdrawn into himself, hiding from something. They retraced their steps through the dark corridors and up the narrow steps that led to the Pavilion of the Speaking Stars. When they reached it, Clary noticed the thick scent of blood and burning as she hadn't when she'd passed through it before. Jace, leaning on Alec, looked around with a sort of mingled horror and confusion on his face. Clary saw that he was staring at the far wall where it was splattered thickly with blood, and she said, Jace, don't look. Then she felt stupid. He was a demon hunter, after all. He'd seen worse. He shook his head.
Something feels wrong.
Everything feels wrong here. Alec tilted his head toward the forest of arches that led away from the pavilion. That's the fastest way out of here. Let's go. They didn't talk much as they made their way back through the Bone City. Every shadow seemed to surge with movement, as if the darkness concealed creatures waiting to jump out at them. Isabel was whispering something under her breath. Though Clary couldn't hear the words themselves, it sounded like another language, something old, Latin maybe. When they reached the stairs that led up out of the city, Clary breathed a silent sigh of relief. The Bone City might have been beautiful once, but it was terrifying now. As they reached the last flight of steps, light stabbed into her eyes, making her cry out in surprise. She could faintly see the angel statue that stood at the head of the stairs, backlit with brilliant golden light, bright as day. She glanced around at the others. They looked as confused as she felt.
The sun couldn't have risen yet, could it? Isabel murmured. How long were we down here?
Alec checked his watch. Not that long. Jace muttered something, too low for anyone else to hear him. Alec craned his ear down.
What did you say?
Witchlight, Jace said, more loudly this time. Isabel hurried up the stairs, Clary behind her, Alec just behind them, struggling to half carry Jace up the steps. At the head of the stairs, Isabel stopped suddenly as if frozen. Clary called out to her, but she didn't move. A moment later, Clary was standing beside her, and it was her turn to stare around in amazement. The garden was full of shadow hunters. 20, maybe 30 of them in dark hunting regalia, inked with marks, each holding a blazing witchlight stone. At the front of the group stood Mayris, in black shadow hunter armor and a cloak, her hood thrown back. Behind her ranged dozens of strangers, men and women Clary had never seen, but who bore the marks of the Nephilim on their arms and faces. One of them, a handsome ebony-skinned man, turned to stare at Clary and Isabel, and beside her, at Jason Alec, who had come up from the steps and stood blinking in the unexpected light.
By the angel, the man said. Mayris, there was already someone down there.
Mayris's mouth opened in a silent gasp when she saw Isabel. Then she closed it, her lips tightening into a thin white line like a slash drawn in chalk across her face.
I know, Malik, she said. These are my children.
Chapter 7. The Mortal Sword. A muttering gasp went through the crowd. The ones who were hooded threw their hoods back, and Clary could see from the looks on the faces of Jace, Alec, and Isabel that many of the shadow hunters in the courtyard were familiar to them.
By the angel.
Mayris's incredulous gaze swept from Alec to Jace, passed over Clary, and returned to her daughter. Jace had moved away from Alec the moment Mayris spoke, and he stood a little away from the other three, his hands in his pockets as Isabel nervously twisted her golden white whip in her hands. Alec, meanwhile, seemed to be fidgeting with his cell phone, though Clary couldn't imagine who he might be calling.
What are you doing here? Alec? Isabel? There was a distress call from the Silent City.
We answered it, Alec said. His gaze moved anxiously over the gathered crowd. Clary could hardly blame him for his nerves. This was the largest crowd of adult shadowhunters, of shadowhunters in general, that she herself had ever seen. She kept looking from face to face, marking the differences between them. They varied widely in age and race and overall appearance, and yet they all gave the same impression of immense, contained power. She could sense their subtle gazes on her, examining her, evaluating. One of them, a woman with rippling silver hair, was staring at her so fiercely that there was nothing subtle about it. Clary blinked and looked away as Alec continued.
You weren't at the Institute, and we couldn't raise anyone, so we came ourselves.
Alec.
It doesn't matter anyway, Alec said. They're dead. The Silent Brothers, they're all dead. They've been murdered.
This time there was no sound from the assembled crowd. Instead, they seemed to go still, the way a pride of lions might go still when it spotted a gazelle.
Dead? Mayris repeated. What do you mean, they're dead?
I think it's quite clear what he means.
A woman in a long gray coat had appeared suddenly at Mayris's side. In the flickering light, she looked to Clary like a sort of Edward Gorey caricature, all sharp angles and pulled back hair and eyes like black pits scraped out of her face. She held a glimmering chunk of witchlight on a long silver chain, looped through the skinniest fingers Clary had ever seen.
They're all dead, she asked, addressing herself to Alec. You found no one alive in the city.
Alec shook his head. Not that we saw, Inquisitor.
So that was the Inquisitor, Clary realized. She certainly looked like someone capable of tossing teenage boys into dungeon cells, for no reason other than that she didn't like their attitude.
That you saw, repeated the Inquisitor,
her eyes like hard, glittering beads. She turned to Mayris.
There may yet be survivors. I would send your people into the city for a thorough check.
Mayris's lips tightened. From what very little Clary had learned about Mayris, she knew that Jace's adoptive mother didn't like being told what to do.
Very well.
She turned to the rest of the shadow hunters. There were not as many, Clary was coming to realize, as she had initially thought, closer to 20 than 30, though the shock of their appearance had made them seem like a teeming crowd. Mayra spoke to Malik in a low voice. He nodded. Taking the arm of the silver-haired woman, he led the shadow hunters toward the entrance to the Bone City. As one after another descended the stairs, taking their witchlight with them, the glow in the courtyard began to fade. The last one in line was the woman with the silver hair. Halfway down the stairs, she paused, turned, and looked back, directly at Clary. Her eyes were full of a terrible yearning, as if she longed desperately to tell Clary something. After a moment, she drew her hood back up over her face and vanished into the shadows. Mayris broke the silence.
Why would anyone murder the Silent Brothers? They're not warriors. They don't carry battle marks.
Don't be naive, Mayris, said the Inquisitor. This was no random attack. The Silent Brothers may not be warriors, but they are primarily guardians and very good at their jobs, not to mention hard to kill. Someone wanted something from the Bone City and was willing to kill the Silent Brothers to get it. This was premeditated.
What makes you so sure?
That wild goose chase that called us all out to Central Park? The dead Fae child?
I wouldn't call that a wild goose chase. The Fae child was drained of blood like the others. These killings could cause serious trouble between the Night Children and other Downworlders.
Distractions, said the Inquisitor dismissively. He wanted us gone from the Institute so that no one would respond to the brothers when they called for aid. Ingenious, really. But then he always was ingenious.
He?
It was Isabel who spoke, her face very pale between the black wings of her hair.
You mean?
Jace's next word sent a shock through Clary, as if she'd touched a live current. Valentine, he said. Valentine took the mortal sword. That's why he killed the Silent Brothers.
A thin, sudden smile curved on the Inquisitor's face, as if Jace had said something that pleased her very much.
Alex started and turned to stare at Jace. Valentine, but you didn't say he was here.
Nobody asked.
He couldn't have killed the brothers. They were torn apart. No one person could have done all that.
He probably had demonic help, said the Inquisitor. He's used demons to aid him before. And with the protection of the cup on him, he could summon some very dangerous creatures. More dangerous than raveners, she added with a curl of her lip. And though she didn't look at Clary when she said it, the words felt somehow like a verbal slap.
Clary's faint hope that the Inquisitor hadn't noticed or recognized her vanished.
Or the pathetic Forsaken.
I don't know about that. Jace was very pale, with hectic spots like fever on his cheekbones. But it was Valentine. I saw him. In fact, he had the sword with him when he came down to the cells and taunted me through the bars. It was like a bad movie, except he didn't actually twirl his mustache.
Clary looked at him worriedly. He was talking too fast, she thought, and looked unsteady on his feet. The Inquisitor didn't seem to notice.
So you're saying that Valentine told you all this? He told you he killed the Silent Brothers because he wanted the Angel's sword?
What else did he tell you? Did he tell you where he was going? What he plans to do with the two mortal instruments? Mayris asked quickly.
Jace shook his head. The Inquisitor moved toward him, her coat swirling around her like drifting smoke. Her gray eyes and gray mouth were drawn into tight horizontal lines.
I don't believe you.
Jace just looked at her.
I didn't think you would.
I doubt the Clave will believe you either, Alex said hotly.
Jace isn't a liar.
Use your brain, Alexander, said the Inquisitor, not taking her eyes off Jace. Leave aside your loyalty to your friend for a moment. What's the likelihood that Valentine stopped by his son's cell for a paternal chat about the Soul Sword and didn't mention what he planned to do with it, or even where he was going?
Sio credesse che mia risposta fosse, Jace said in a language Clary didn't know. A persona che mai tornasse al mondo.
Dante, the Inquisitor looked dryly amused.
The Inferno.
You're not in hell yet, Jonathan Morgenstern, though if you insist on lying to the Clave, you'll wish you were.
She turned back to the others.
And doesn't it seem odd to anyone that the Soul Sword should disappear the night before Jonathan Morgenstern is supposed to stand trial by its blade? And that his father is the one who took it?
Jace looked shocked at that, his lips parting slightly in surprise, as if this had never occurred to him.
My father didn't take the sword for me. He took it for him. I doubt he even knew about the trial. How awfully convenient for you, regardless, and for him. He won't have to worry about you spilling his secrets.
Yeah, Jace said. He's terrified I'll tell everyone that he's always really wanted to be a ballerina.
The Inquisitor simply stared at him.
I don't know any of my father's secrets, he said less sharply. He never told me anything.
The Inquisitor regarded him with something close to boredom.
If your father didn't take the sword to protect you, then why did he take it?
It's a mortal instrument, said Clary. It's powerful, like the cup. Valentine likes power.
The cup has an immediate use, said the Inquisitor. He can use it to make an army. The sword is used in trials. I can't see how that would interest him.
He might have done it to destabilize the Clave, suggested Mayris, to sap our morale, to say that there is nothing we can protect from him if he wants it badly enough.
It was a surprisingly good argument, Clary thought, but Mayris didn't sound very convinced.
The fact is,
but they never got to hear what the fact was, because at that moment, Jace raised his hand as if he meant to ask a question, looked startled and sat down on the grass suddenly, as if his legs had given out. Alec knelt down next to him, but Jace waved away his concern.
Leave me alone. I'm fine.
You're not fine. Clary joined Alec on the grass, Jace watching her with eyes whose pupils were huge and dark, despite the witchlight illuminating the night. She glanced down at his wrist, where Alec had drawn the Arazze. The mark was gone, not even a faint white scar left behind to show that it had worked. Her eyes met Alec's, and she saw her own anxiety reflected there. Something's wrong with him, she said. Something serious.
He probably needs a healing rune.
The Inquisitor looked as if she were exquisitely annoyed at Jace for being injured during events of such importance.
An Arazze, or...
We tried that, said Alec. It isn't working. I think there's something of demonic origin going on here.
Like demon poison?
Maris moved as if she meant to go to Jace, but the Inquisitor held her back.
He's shamming, she said. He ought to be in the Silent City cells right now.
Alec rose to his feet at that.
You can't say that! Look at him!
He gestured at Jace, who had slumped back on the grass, his eyes closed.
He can't even stand up. He needs doctors. He needs...
The Silent Brothers are dead, said the Inquisitor. Are you suggesting a mundane hospital?
No.
Alec's voice was tight.
I thought he could go to Magnus.
Isabel made a sound somewhere between a sneeze and a cough. She turned away as the Inquisitor looked at Alec blankly.
Magnus?
He's a warlock, said Alec. Actually, he's the High Warlock of Brooklyn.
You mean Magnus Bane, said Maris.
He has a reputation.
He healed me after I fought a greater demon, said Alec. The Silent Brothers couldn't do anything, but Magnus...
It's ridiculous, said the Inquisitor. What you want is to help Jonathan escape.
He's not well enough to escape, Isabel said. Can't you see that?
Magnus would never let that happen, Alec said with a quelling glance at his sister. He's not interested in crossing the clave.
And how would he propose preventing it?
The Inquisitor's voice dripped acid sarcasm.
Jonathan is a shadow hunter. We are not so easy to keep under lock and key.
Maybe you should ask him, Alec suggested.
The Inquisitor smiled her razor smile.
By all means. Where is he?
Alec glanced down at the phone in his hand and then back at the thin gray figure in front of him.
He's here, he said.
He raised his voice.
Magnus? Magnus, come on out.
Even the Inquisitor's eyebrows shot up when Magnus strode through the gate. The High Warlock was wearing black leather pants, a belt with a buckle in the shape of a jeweled M, and a cobalt-blue Prussian military jacket open over a white lace shirt. He shimmered with layers of glitter. His gaze rested for a moment on Alec's face with amusement and a hint of something else before moving on to Jace, prone on the grass.
Is he dead?
He inquired.
He looks dead.
No, snapped Maris. He's not dead.
Have you checked? I could kick him if you want.
Magnus moved toward Jace.
Stop that, the Inquisitor snapped, sounding like Clary's third-grade teacher demanding that she stop doodling on her desk with a marker. He's not dead, but he's injured, she added, almost grudgingly. Your medical skills are required. Jonathan needs to be well enough for the interrogation.
Fine, but it'll cost you.
I'll pay it, said Maris.
The Inquisitor didn't even blink.
Very well, but he can't remain at the Institute. Just because the sword is gone doesn't mean the interrogation won't proceed as planned. And in the meantime, the boy must be held under observation. He's clearly a flight risk.
A flight risk? Isabel demanded. You act as if he tried to escape from the Silent City.
Well, the Inquisitor said, he's no longer in his cell now, is he?
That's not fair. You couldn't have expected him to stay down there surrounded by dead people.
Not fair?
Not fair?
Do you honestly expect me to believe that you and your brother were motivated to come to the Bone City because of a distress call, and not because you wanted to free Jonathan from what you clearly consider unnecessary confinement? And do you expect me to believe you won't try?